Well, thank you very much, Bruce, and everyone for inviting me to read my poems, which I've started to call several years ago Valentines, because I found that all the poems I was writing were love poems. And so it just seemed to me that Valentines to the world, people that I meet and know, and to situations and events. I've only done a public reading one other time, was several years ago. I'm less nervous today than I was then. So I hope to be able to read them a little more clearly, without so much self-consciousness as before. I thought I'd start out by reading a poem to get us afloat. This poem is called "Fairy from the Vineyard." It's about a visit to Martha's Vineyard and it coming back from there several years ago. "Fairy from the Vineyard." Too late to get beyond the kitsch-laden streets, to see the real islands dying, the wilds come this far. Unless the ride was all we craved, the buoyancy of being bound away. On the upper deck, we join the crowd, inhaling the wine-dark air. You snuggle closer, warming my hands, while the woman beside you keeps trying to clear her throat. Fat drops of rain start hitting the retriever panting over there as we go below to the loudspeaker's whine. Major fireworks ahead, folks. Fasten your belts. Over the bow, a narrow shore, the color of shell beckons, then backs away. Thunder churns against the engines, the windows fog. Your fingers tighten into mine. Opposite, a tiny girl reads on and on, curling deeper into her chair. Pages of shipwreck in sight of land. Rescue, no rescue. Drowning, return. When I chose that poem to read at the beginning, it prompted me this morning to write another poem with the same title. Several years later, "Fairy from the Vineyard," Valentine. Aren't all small islands mythical, beguiling? As soon as we see one, we want to go there. Is it the allure of an independent life separated from the mainland, where we feel only one out of so many group souls? While out there, the forests and rivers, the secret beaches and radiant nights might return us to our original selves, the ego that owns an island, but not quite yet itself. The world invites us to be greedy, foolish, and vain, or merely good, itself an island still to be explored. This is called Dancing Valentine. Fools and little children, I have suffered to come unto me. I scooped them up and we danced around until we fell upon the ground. We suffered through our crazy laughter. We tried not to make a sound, stay hidden in our places. But our fear grew into our faces, spinning round and round, a future fairy tale we wove out of foolish, childish woes. These are some Valentines from a few years back. Past lives, Valentine. We lived on the lake. We lived in the woods. We lived at the end of the line. We gave birth. We figured it out. We grew friends like a small orchard where a few bore fruit. We did see the genius of small things. We were not fooled by greatness or gardens. We could feel how they suffered to get that way. It's called clairvoyant Valentine. I don't want second vision so much as the first vision of you strolling in a beeline toward my mind, though you were not aware of it at the time, and I was pretending also. That's what we do, us lovers. We bring love into the world, and we harvest it and store it for the winter. Precocious Valentine. When I was five and some, I walked to the lake alone, across three busy streets and a bridge over the tracks, and was later found playing on the sand, where I had spent the day asking for food from strangers, or when I needed something to drink, convincing them my parents were just there down the beach. Was I dreaming or lying? It felt so free to be on my own, making it up as I went along. But all I remember about that day, besides the terror of my mother going on in the background, was a long conversation with the lake, in which I learned you too were in the world, and I would find you. Turned around, Valentine. Left to myself, I would not become myself. I would be fine, I guess, but meaningless. Like this hungry starling intelligently leaping on my green and startled lawn, clutching some midnight still, some rain. So much to me in that leaping. With my own hands, I removed my similarly hungry heart so it can do that hopping he does, that jive, that joy. Because one day you saw it thrashing and urged me to lift it out. You who live with the sun beating soundly inside you and your heart flying freely about. Blue Tulip, Valentine. When I showed him my crayon portrait of a blue tulip, he laughed out loud. There's no such thing as a blue tulip. Then I said, what do you call this unmistakable marine, the squeaky leaves I've captured? Too incoherent for you? Too royal a cross between your new bruise and the bottom of the lake? Freedom, Valentine. Isn't the heart still only a seed shallowly planted in the body, which dies to feed it, so that its first drink in the cold fire be juicy and sweet? If to have and to relinquish the power to enforce fictions on oneself is freedom, how deny angels you haven't seen? The stage is small and poorly lit. The seed's soliloquy runs on for pages and pages. Valentine's Valentine. Did I miss a day? Of course it would have to be the day everything changed you so completely. No one can remember how we got here, or just any day where nothing at all happens. We all sleep through it, even while the sun roars through the windows deeper. Nevertheless, deeper and deeper into love we go. The birds, Valentine. I heard the birds disagreeing in my backyard tree, loud and shrill. It was speech, not song. It sounded Corinthian or Apollonian. I get confused. Outside of lovers, one never hears our original tongue anymore. Those five shapely notes from which there are easily now 12 baskets left over. As my lover the air likes to say, the languages are dying one by one until only love is spoken. Garden Valentine. Last night asleep, I planned a flower garden for a large, rectangular, empty space. Out of all the gardens I've never made, this would be my masterpiece. Isn't it really all about the timing of the colors and the weaving into one another of the local seasons? But nothing too contrived. The soil is the soul of things. I leave the weather to the gods. I imagine a few hidden rooms along a path leading to a clearing where a few loaded apple trees await our eager choosing. Let us, Valentine. Let us lift up our flaming swords of love into the heights of the farthest stars and into the depths of the darkest moments. Let them sear through our grandiosity and pain that even such a sword exists if we can just imagine it ourselves. As heroes of some childish play, our armor a black cardboard box, our tinfoil helmets flashing in the lights, standing in the silence of forgotten lines. But just then we remember to lift them up, our flaming swords of love. And for a few moments, we are good and everything around us better. A brief history of words, Valentine. Words were born as simple sounds that outlined pictures in the air before they grew up to become epics. Back in the day, only the gods had words, often the same word, endlessly repeated, while we mute animals could only listen to their babble. What a human is to a horse, an angel tries to teach a name. But if you give us speech, we said, you'll take away our innocence and passion. But the words wouldn't listen as they fell into our mouths, and words became the flesh of gods. New Year's, Valentine. I double-booked heaven and earth. I found I could be in both at once. Angels strode over my crossed veins. I stranded myself in a crowd of clouds, rescuing my face from a drowned tree. I texted Li Po my sympathy for his lost children and my swollen feet, but he deleted me immediately. I buried my books in a red-tailed hawk who reduced their words to a single squawk, a sound the seraphim tossed to her. Little pieces of light on a quiet lake. I was enthralled and appalled by myself. I was thrilled and filled with the world. I could feel you waking inside me. Love I have yet to deserve. This going back to Advent. Advent, Valentine. Like on the old maps, the face of the wind appeared in the only cloud in the sky. Long strands of hair streaming behind, gazing up at the full blazing moon, immaculate as Mary's womb, sailing above my little house. Slowly that cloud curdled itself into the shape of a coiled snake, while slowly the moon escaped, sweeping its light around it like a cape, feeling the child inside her kick, the dark around her hard and thick. The sacred cosmic ball game of King Netzahualcoyotl. When the Solomon of the Toltecs, King of Texcoco, blended into one splendid ceremony all the physical movements and cosmic forces that really mattered, the world had a way of stopping the falling, or if not fully stopping it, at least of seeing how one is always either cooperating with death or cooperating with life, only our own deeds determining our movements up or down. These were no children, though they played for pleasure on a field, their temples merely extended upward to the sun. Imagine a day when everything reflected something deeper, and the ball of stone batted, kicked, and thrown between the 20 gods' legs, through their windowed hearts and the holes in their heads, was you, your life ascending on the stairs, reaching the point where the path divides. How transparent the golden sky seems then, disclosing the twisted shape of the universe itself, through which the glow of the evening star offers a passable, even if anguished, road. This was before poetry got her divorce, before her children and parents, one by one, turned up in the morning, missing or dead, reappearing in today's soccer matches and Sunday morning services, and the sugar skulls littering El Camino de los Muertos. And in the poets who visit his vague pyramids, struggling to understand how water could be the polarity of emotion, violence the other side of air, peace the opposite of the inferior man. This is also another poem from a few years ago, before they were all called Valentines. It's called Mar y Sol, Sea and Sun. On the road to the sea, I dream of your body, the desert on either side, still something virginal in places, in others a wasted space. It's Friday at 5 in the afternoon, the road empty except for one car, always the same distance ahead. And coming round a turn, I suddenly see your neck and shoulders because of the way the sun possesses the green, how it says, see, this is all mine. Not the meaning of it, but the feeling, the language inside the language, not what the words want. But your body is not the landscape, nor merely the interpretation the light allows. Your body is what rises from these weeds and broken, blown away things. Like now, seeing that small place I love, just there above your navel, with its light and tenderness, traveling straight toward and through me from that point in the perspective from which all things emerge, but not before I can kiss it and continually passes toward and through me, and me continually kissing it, on this darkening road to the sea, where your heart is, where there is nothing and no one for miles. When you imagine the butterflies against the sea, when you imagine weight against absence, the twittering against the muscularity, the rolling against the fits and starts, worry against faith, faith against release, what do you see first? Of course, death mars the view, and it's cooler to sit here in the shadow the noble column offers. The strict blue against the brown wings' leniency. I thought of their daring and how they think only of their flowers against that immensity. How they want to distract them a little from it. Is that it? The way the lonely swimmer takes the sea's mind off its mad tendencies. The arms that used to be wings. The ardor of their striving symmetrically laid down. The body on its bed of waves. Against the body, yours on mine. Some other word for love. These are pictures of the last days you needed me. Then follow the days of pretending you did, and my pretending to let go. If I tell you the sky made me lose sleep, lose weight, made me relinquish my natural soft-spokenness. In exchange, let me hold inside for a few moments the failed majesty the lake reflects after a storm has taken it, calling that reason, passing that off as sensible behavior, what would you have salvaged? I tried to keep the sky, though it's not the one you imagine, just a word, a key, something with a certain power still, a certain influence, a sign that when you click on it, opens like a book, the body buried in this poem. And just because they're crossing my mind, I'm adding the sing-song of Japanese schoolgirls giggling together outside Dante's tomb from one of our lost snapshots taken in Ravenna not so long ago. Though since then, some of those trees have walked right out of the darkness of being there above us, into the darkness of the light all around me now. Last Valentine. That's not really true, but that's its title. Last Valentine. Though you are in glory now, I still visit your grave among the graves above the bay, the flowering sculpture garden where it's always spring about to happen, and the stones lean out as if taking their first steps. After all, it was death that inspired architecture. The stones rolled away, revealing a little room, and the idea of a dome was born in the ravaged body. I come to guard above the waves, and though I feel you everywhere, this was the last place you were seen. Perennial Valentine. In the old plant nursery at baseline, where the newborns are all balled up in their little plastic cribs, bawling their beauty away. I mean the magenta petunias are completely out of control. While the camellias go on snoring, I don't think they ever really wake up to their potential. But way back in the corner you encounter all the ones that didn't sell, like good ideas no one wanted. Like last year, there was a run on roses, while the magenta petunias sailed right on by. Can we go back to Christmas for a moment? Christmas is every day, after all. What is Christmas, Valentine? Every Christmas, we return to the place where we were born, called back by everything we touched, to forget everything we've known, and slip back into our mother's womb as she walks through the crowded town. For a few moments, we go back to the comfort of being unborn, not yet anything the world has ever known, as if we left something behind that could link us to a crime, some face we overlooked that must be our own. Musical chores, Valentine. Doing the dishes, I put on Wagner. For the hoovering, I prefer Mahler. For the dusting, usually Nirvana or the Nuns of Santa Ana. Making the bed, I prefer rhythm and blues or the old gospel tunes. Or taking a shower, I favor Satie or something cleansing from Debussy. November 9th, Valentine. He likes to attend the fall conference of the gnomes under the dying lantana, the ceremony of the seeds being carried to their tombs, the unveiling of the theotokos, the chanting of the drones, and then everything hurriedly packed away, nothing emptier than an empty room, where some mystery has been. He likes to come early to watch the gnomes assemble, the king and queen carried in, down the long dark corridors, and sit long after to remember. When the cock crows, Valentine. My neighbor who keeps a rooster sometimes makes me wonder how many other farm animals he's hiding in his house. Has he turned the bedrooms into a stable, snoring with the horses? I swear some nights I can hear a cow's sorrowful mooing, like a secret farm with the woods cut down, a safe house on a busy city street for dreaming sheep and the bustle of corn stalks striking up from the living room floor, called by the moon once more. Unanswered Valentine. Why did Jesus not say to Judas, "You cannot eat my body or drink my blood," though he knew he would betray him? What was the knowledge he had above any thought of escape? Does he not leave to Judas the lost judgment of his debts? Judas must have been one of the first encounters on his visit to hell. I think he must have blessed him then and thanked him for his part, told him not to worry, and held him to his heart. Both of Us, Valentine. Putting aside all this living and dying, let's go walk on some water. I mean, what are you doing today besides laundry and what's for supper? Let's take our small boat far out on the freezing and choppy lake, despite that dark cloud coming toward us. Let's do some fishing for the health of our spiritual selves. Let's indulge in some eternity. I mean the one standing on the shore, watching and waiting for us not to drown, then walking home through the quiet woods, feeling both lost and found. And this last one, as a thank you to you all, gratitude, Valentine. They say your heart swells if you're truly grateful. Like a balloon, it exits your mouth with a sigh of relief, rising to join the clouds and the birds going by slowly, so you can savor it. They say when a kindness comes home to you as if from a foreign country, you start to breathe again the pure, intoxicating air of our mountain homeland for a moment, if you dare.